Hello everyone, I'm Ben Morton and I am delighted to welcome you to episode number one of my brand new podcast. The aim of the show is to really dig into the art and science of leadership through interviews with MDs, CEOs and other senior leaders. In doing so, I'm going to try and decode and identify all of the things that we can be doing personally to become even better leaders for our organisations and for those that we have the privilege and responsibility to lead. This episode was the brainchild of my very good friend Mike Williams, who suggested we start the podcast and the first season with him interviewing me. In this interview, I talk about my own leadership journey and some of the major leadership transitions I went through and the lessons I learned along the way. I also share some of the tools, frameworks, and principles that guide me as a leader and help me to run my business and serve my clients. Mike also asks me about some of the best standout leadership books I've read over the years, what I'm reading right now, and some of the tools, habits, and ways of working that I use on a day-to-day basis, again, to lead my business and to play at my best. In short, Mike asks me all of the questions that I ask all of the guests that come on the show. That's it for the intro, folks. So without any further delay, let's dive right in and please enjoy my conversation with my good friend, Mike Williams.
Ben, welcome to your own podcast.
Thank you very much. It's good to have me.
Well, what we're hoping with this interview and this episode is to learn a little bit more about yourself, your own journey into what you're doing today and how you're supporting other people. I guess I'm going to start with a quick question in defining what is it you actually do? That situation where somebody says to you, oh, hi, Ben, what do you do for a living? How do you answer that?
I've never been great at the elevator pitch answer, I must be honest. The way I describe what I do is essentially I'm a leadership guy. Always have been. I suspect I always will be. Like, since I was a kid at school, leadership has always been the passion, whether it was leading the school rugby team, kind of being an army cadet or whatever. It's the common thread that goes through my whole career, which is what I do now. I help senior leaders, senior leadership teams to be the best they can possibly be in terms of their leadership skills, either individually or as a team. So yeah, I'm the leadership guy.
And knowing you as I do, there is an interesting journey to where you are today, being the leadership guy. So do you want to just take us through what has been your career journey to get you to this point?
Yeah, cool. So if Mum were sitting here with us answering that question for me, I think Mum would say I decided to join the army age 5. Now, I'd certainly decided to join the army quite young, but I'm not convinced it was quite that young. But the story Mum tells was we was at like a summer fair at our local sports centre, and the army recruiting team had a stand set up there. And at, let's say, 5 or 6 years old, I'd walk past absolutely mesmerised by all the kit and equipment and the soldiers. And Mum says she knew in that moment that was it. She'd lost her little boy to the army. But kind of fast forward, probably when I was 14, I decided to join the army cadets, which was where the passion for the army really kind of grew. One day, a friend of mine from school who also went was writing down some details off a poster for the army sixth form college that he was going to apply to go to, a place called Welbeck College. I said, what are you doing, Alex? He said, oh, I'm thinking about applying to go to this place. I went, oh, that sounds cool. I'll apply as well. And to cut a long story short, it turned out that I got into the college and he didn't. So that was the start of my army career. So went off to join the army at Welbeck College at 16. Did kind of A-levels with the army, went through university with the army, and then on to Sandhurst, leaving Sandhurst 2001, I think, age 22. Did 5 years in the army after that. leaving as a captain in 2006, having done a couple of operational tours of Iraq. Then after that, did a few jobs for sort of corporate companies, really. One for a sort of youth expedition company that was sort of quite entrepreneurial, but then got acquired by TUI Travel. So interesting journey going from working in a entrepreneurial high growth business and then suddenly going into a massive PLC. Like TUI were certainly at that time the biggest travel company in Europe, if not the world, I think. From there, kind of went to Tesco briefly and did an 18-month spell working in their leadership academy. And there's a whole series of stories around my journey and Tesco.
I've got to ask you that, because in your career so far, army, I get.
Yeah.
And then you transition out of the army into leading expeditions.
Yeah.
I think most of us, when we transfer jobs, we do take something that's similar or familiar to our previous role into the next one, even though it's learning and it's growth. Yeah. So I could get that bit. But going from an expedition company into Tesco seems to, on the face of it, leave nothing familiar and nothing similar from that previous role into there. So what was it that made you want to make that kind of a leap?
Yeah, it's a good question. So my role at the expedition company, whilst I led a decent number of the expeditions, kind of my initial role was working in operations, but essentially it was a training and recruitment job. And the story goes, I'd done that for a couple of years, and the MD, a guy called Nigel Miller, turned around to me one day and said, "Ben, do you want to take on the HR director role?" And I think I might have actually laughed in his face when he asked me that question, which is never a good thing to do to your boss or the MD of the company. And I said, "Nigel, what are you talking about? I'm an ex-army guy. I do operations." I was quite naive at the time. I said, "I don't get HR, Nigel. It's pink and fluffy. It's the soft stuff. I don't get it. I'm an army guy. I don't think it's for me." And he was a really smart guy. He kind of looked at me I'm sure he had a slight wry smile on his face. And he went, "Well, Ben, you know, I wasn't in the army, but my understanding is the role of an army officer is all about developing people, getting the best from people, building, maintaining morale." He said, "I think you'd be ideally suited to the role. Do you want it or not?" So I said, "Yes." And there began my transition into HR. So the move from World Challenge Exhibition Company into Tesco was doing a HR role and doing a learning and development, leadership development role for them. So that there was actually quite a strong thread, albeit it turned out not to be the right organisation for me at that time.
I think when we often transfer our skills, it's great to be able to be something different in an environment. I think particularly in a big organisation like Tesco, that the fact that it would have somebody with your background in there, I think must have been a great asset to Tesco. But when you're that individual, the one that is so different, particularly in working in HR, pink and fluffy.
Yeah, I don't think HR's pink and fluffy anymore, by the way, just for the record.
But, you know, to be the one that's probably one of the few that's actually carried a gun in HR, not actually whilst you're working for HR, but you get what I mean.
Yeah.
How did it feel to be working for Tesco when you were the kind of the odd one out? You had these great transferable skills, but it must have felt like you were kind of helping them, but not necessarily part of the usual route.
Yeah, there was a few ex-military people knocking around in Tesco when I was there. So I don't think I necessarily stood out that much and was the odd one out. But the big, big learning I took from Tesco that I didn't understand at all when I joined, because actually it was only my second job after leaving the army. I'd been in the army for so long. It was just that an interview is a two-way process. Like, as the candidate going for the job, I didn't do anywhere near enough, I guess, due diligence, to use that word, on the organisation to really understand, like, was Tesco the right company for me to work for? Was the department I was going into the right department for me to work in? And it turned out at that time, like, it absolutely wasn't. Like, my values didn't fit at all with the values of the organisation, to the point where actually a lot of them were competing or butting up against each other, which made me, on reflection, like, unhappy, ineffective. I didn't do well.
and sort of all that I believed about leadership and good leadership was very different to the leadership style that I was seeing in Tesco at the time. So then in my work now, and whenever people often come to me asking for advice when they're looking for new jobs and job hunting, like the thing for me is always just like, do your due diligence on the company and like interview them as well, because it's a two-way street, definitely.
And what you did there was, from what I understand with your career, you recognised you didn't fit with the culture and it was obviously grinding away at you. So what was the spark, though, to make you say, right, well, I'm going to leave this behind and I'm going to go and do something different?
Well, there's two answers to that. Interestingly, I didn't really realise how bad it was for me at the time, but I'll come back to that in a second. So when I was there, a colleague who sat behind me, she was bringing a supplier in to run a new training course, and she just leant over one day and said, Ben, I've got this guy coming in to run a training program for us, a guy called Richard Nugent, will you come on the sort of train the trainer and give me your thoughts on the program? So I went along. It was a 3-day course, and straight away I connected really well with the guy that was running the course. We got chatting. I realized we had lots of shared views around what great leadership looks like, what great training looks like, and I started following him on social media, and I found out he was looking to bring a third partner into his business at that time. So got in touch, totally sort of fortuitous, and ended up joining his business several years back now as his third partner. Anyway, kind of that was all going on. I went home one day from Tesco and said to my wife, Jo, I said, I'm done. I've decided I'm going to kind of, if it's okay with you, I'm going to hand him a notice and I'm going to give working for myself a go, kind of joining this other business. And Jo's response was, I remember it really clearly. She said, thank God. She said, have you not realised how miserable and unhappy you've been? And I didn't really at all. But in that moment, it's like one of those Matrix moments where you suddenly see it all. I went, I have. Like, this has been absolutely like killing me and sucking the life out of me. Which is interesting as well, because it's one of the things I talk a lot about with leaders, is really understanding, probably on a deeper level than most of us naturally do, like, what are your core values? What's the stuff you really care about? What's the stuff that you stand for as a leader? What's the stuff you take a stand on? And try and make sure like there's at least some fit between those and the organization you work for. And I knew values were important, and I had some understanding of what my personal values are when I was there, but nowhere near the level of understanding I have now. So I'm certain now that if I went and worked at Tesco now, I would have left much sooner, because I'd have realised that it didn't fit. Or really, I probably wouldn't have even have joined, because hopefully I'd have done the due diligence and been clear on my values, and actually that's not the right place for me.
It's interesting what you said there about values and when you're supporting leaders for them to understand and define their own values. I think talking to senior leaders, they often find themselves so focused on the day, yeah, so focused on what they have to do, and so driven by achieving goals and targets, that question of stopping them to say, so what are your values? How long does it take people to understand that? And what was it like for you? How long did it take you? Was it something you could just write down in half an hour? Was it something that took a little while, a bit of thought? Just wanted to explore a little bit more about how do you help people understand what their values are?
Yeah, it's not a quick process. It's a bit of a wrestle. It's something that needs to sort of percolate over time. You write it, you come back to it. I think our values change a little bit over time, depending on sort of life circumstances and what's going on. Like if you'd asked me 10 years ago what my values are, as much as kind of I'm really close to my mum and dad and family is important, I wouldn't have said family was up there in sort of my top 5 or 6 values. If you ask me now, or ask me 6 years ago, family is absolutely up in there, which kind of coincides with kind of having our daughter Freya. So yeah, it is. It's just something you really need to keep coming back to, reflecting on, like testing them, maybe talk to other people, like, this is what's important to me. Do you see that in me? It's a process of refinement and percolation.
And what was it from your values that you saw in this new opportunity to go outside of a big organisation and start doing something that was more supporting individuals with training and learning and leadership and that kind of thing? So what was it in your values that made you realise that this other company reflects far more what I want to be?
It's probably more about what was lacking in my current role at Tesco at the time. So like, autonomy and freedom is really important to me, like having the chance to sort of make my own decisions, not always being told simply what to do and how to do it. And I really didn't get that in my particular role at Tesco at the time. So the thought of actually either working for myself or working for a very small team, like, would bring me loads of freedom and autonomy. So that was probably the big one at the time. Sort of growth and learning and development is really important to me as well. And I just suddenly saw like this whole new world of running my own business that I knew very, very little about. And on the one hand, like, that was scary, because I'm probably naturally quite risk averse despite 10 years in the army. But like, the scope to learn and grow and go somewhere completely new actually was so appealing that it kind of counteracted or outweighed that kind of risk averseness.
And so how long now have you been working independently with your own business, supporting businesses, leaders, and those sorts of things?
It's about seven years, so about 3 years, I think, working with the guys, the previous company I joined, and the rest kind of working for myself, building Ben Morton Leadership.
Well, it's been a really interesting career journey. I mean, you've got Ben Morton Leadership, you're supporting international companies, top suite leadership people. You're also helping leaders of all different sort of grades within organisations. You've written two books. It's quite a lot that was in there. And that transition from army through to different types of organisations and into on your own. It's quite an interesting career journey. But with all these transitions in your career, what was the most challenging, and what are the big learnings that you've taken away from it?
So the most challenging was probably going from World Challenge / TUI into Tesco. Like, one of the reasons we've already touched on was the values piece and me fitting in. The other one, which again is something that was a really powerful lesson for me, something I share with my clients now, especially when they're transitioning roles, which is really about the power of relationships in your network, which was fascinating, because sort of almost leadership 101 in the army when I was at Sandhurst, they just drummed into us again and again and again, like, get to know your soldiers. If you're going to ask them to like do something extreme or make the ultimate sacrifice, they'll only do that if they really get a sense that you know them as a person. So it's all about know your people, so build relationships, right? Which I know and served me really well in the military. It served me well in the expedition company. And then for some reason, when I stepped into Tesco, which was a big change for me, because I've gone from really a small entrepreneurial, not startup, because they're in the high growth phase and then got sold, but going from that to a massive PLC, like probably the world's or one of the world's biggest kind of retailers, one of the UK's biggest companies. Suddenly going into this massive organisation, I looked around and looked at my boss, and I realised to get anything done, it was all about sort of, I guess we call it socialising the plan. So for any project you was working on, people would write their deck, like do the rounds, all the stakeholders, taking them through it, making any amendments and tweaks, getting people pre-aligned before you went in and did your final presentation. And for me at the time, and I think this was only because I was going through this unknown values clash, like that just didn't sit well. It felt very political to me, with all the negative connotations from political. And I thought, oh, I don't like this. I don't get it. It feels insincere and incongruent. And I just didn't get it. But actually, like, looking back now, like, it's how you get stuff done, right? It's relationship building. It's about managing your network. But that was a failing on me at the time. I just didn't get that, and had become quite blinkered and closed in my thinking. But that was probably the biggest lesson, like, the in business, in leadership, like, we deliver stuff through other people. So it's like the relationships and the network is everything.
So through your time and your understanding and your leadership, I'm really interested that you've taken that element of Sandhurst training and army great leadership and then coupled it with what happens in the business world. And you've done this at senior levels, you've done this with lots of big corporate clients in the last 7 years. So just, are there any particular models, frameworks or principles that you rely on as a leader now that you know you've combining both these really big styles of leadership? What are the things that are core that you take or frameworks that you use?
It's really interesting because obviously, as you know, because I gave them to you, these are the questions I generally ask the guests on the show. So it's,
don't ruin the facade that I'm asking these questions off the top of my head. Sorry, so
it's really interesting me answering the questions that I'm asking all the guests that come on the show. So I scribbled down my answers. So actually, I think there's a model to share right now. There's a framework to share, and there's a principle. So in terms of models, absolutely core throughout my whole career has been John Adair's functional approach to leadership. So many, many people have seen it. It's his three interlocking circles, where at any time as a leader, we need to be balancing the needs of the task, the team and the individual. Like from 16, joining Welbeck College through to today, it's like the one that's really been with me the whole time. Like, I've spent years trying to create kind of my version of it, but really there's nothing better. So I can't. So full credit to John Adair for that. So that's the model. In terms of a framework, one that's been really transformational for me and helps lots of my clients is a series of planning tools I have. Part of it is literally just sort of horizon scanning. So each week on a Friday, I print out my calendar for the next 2 weeks, and I always ask myself the question, what's coming up in 2 weeks that I need to be focusing on this week? And then work out sort of my main efforts for the coming week. So the 3 to 5 things I've absolutely got to nail. And then I just chunk that down to the start of every day. I do sort of 10, 15 minutes planning, where I look at that weekly plan and go, okay, today I do a bit of kind of reflection on the previous day, but what are the 3 to 5 main things I've got to achieve this day to go to bed knowing that it's been a really, really great day? So that planning framework is really, really valuable for me. And then, like, principles, I've got loads, but the one that really sits at everything, at the heart of everything that I do, and it's probably more of my overarching purpose than a principle. But I'll share it now nonetheless. Like, it's this really strong belief I have that to be in a leadership position, it's a great privilege and it's a great, great responsibility, because every single person that we lead is the most important person in someone else's life, be it their husband, wife, mum, dad, son, daughter, brother, sister, whatever. And as a leader, what we do, how we act, what we say, it doesn't just have an impact on people when they're at work or working from home right now, like Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 or whatever hours they work. Like, it has an impact on what they're like when they go home. And that'll have an impact on the ones that they love. So actually our reach as leaders is huge, and it goes way beyond our direct reports. So that is like always in my mind with my team, with all my clients. So that's probably the overarching principle.
So when you've got these principles, got these frameworks, how do you know when you're getting it right? Because I think if you're in a position of leadership, sometimes it's uncomfortable. Sometimes you've always got to be thinking. Sometimes it's exhausting. Sometimes you've still got your own task list. You've got to be concerned of the individual and the team. So how do you know when you're getting it right?
That's a really hard question. And the reason I struggle to answer that is, some people, it's a bit of psychology here, a bit of neuro-linguistic programming. So some people are what's called internally referenced. So the way internally referenced people know if they're getting it right or something's going well is it's just based on gut feeling and some internal scale, which is me. Whereas other people, they get their feedback from some external data. So feedback from a boss, a colleague, some sort of survey data point or whatever. So my default answer to your question is like, what do you mean, Mike? How do I know? You just know. if I try and deconstruct how I just know, I think you can tell when you look in somebody's eyes. When you look in the eyes of those that you're leading, you can tell if you're getting it right. You can tell if people are happy and willing and regularly sort of going above and beyond and want to help. I mean, you can feel it in the air and the atmosphere when it's working. And ultimately, I think whether you're leading a team, a business unit, a business, a group of businesses, you'll see it in your results. Like what you're delivering, your outputs will be going in the right direction if you're getting it right. Although your business results could be going in the right direction, and you might be getting it wrong in terms of leadership, i.e., I'm trying to think how to describe this without using any expletives, but you could be a bit of a bad boss where you are breaking those that you lead. But still delivering your number, but that would be short term. Eventually those people will start leaving and your results will dip off.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing then is, I guess leadership is not just the day-to-day, am I getting it right? How does it feel? But it's also that long-term sustained ability to perform as a team or as an organisation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've written a couple of books yourself on leadership. But what are the books that you've read that have had the biggest impact on your own leadership or things that you would recommend everybody should read?
God, there's so many, Mike. It's hard to narrow it down. Judging by the fact that the pages are all falling out of it, where I've thumbed it so many times, probably one of the books I've read the most number of times cover to cover is Winning by Clive Woodward, the former England rugby coach who took us to World Cup glory in 2003. That's absolutely brilliant. If you love business and sport and the crossover between the two, like it's a must read, I think. On a completely different thread, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl is like pretty incredible book. I challenge anybody to read that and sort of not be moved or have their thinking shifted in some way. That's a pretty amazing book. And then probably a classic that lots of leaders would add on their list is Good to Great by Jim Collins. I think is really, really solid. It's kind of I use it a lot in terms of how I run, kind of grow my business. So they're three standout ones, I think, for me.
And what are you reading at the moment? Because I guess those are the ones that you keep going back to. But what's the current thinking, the current things that you're reading? I mean, I guess we probably have to preface that with the ones that are worth reading,
not
the ones you've read and think people should just bin.
Yeah, well, that's a good point, actually. About 4 years ago, I suddenly had this revelation that it's okay to stop reading a book. Whereas before that point, even if I wasn't enjoying it, wasn't getting much from it, kind of I really believed like I had to get to the end, so I'd sort of fight on through this book that I really wasn't enjoying or getting much through. So now I'm quite happy to like ditch a book, and sometimes I might ditch it and years later I might pick it up and reread it. Like about 3 years ago I tried to read Team of Teams by Stanley McChrystal, the former US 3 or 4 star general, and for some reason at the time I found it really hard going and ditched it, and I read it picked up again 3 months later and thoroughly enjoyed it and got loads from it. So I think sometimes like the timing of a book can be key. But I'm normally reading 3 or 4 books at once at any one time. I think on the list right now, I'm just finishing off the 4 Disciplines of Execution, which is really good. I'm about a third of the way through because it's an absolute beast of a book, the Leonardo da Vinci biography by Walter Isaacson, which is pretty fascinating. I knew very, very little about Leonardo da Vinci, actually, so that's cool. Just the breadth of interest that he had is amazing. He's a pretty impressive human being to study, I think, if you're interested in peak performance and stuff. And then I must admit, I'm probably only understanding about half of it, and that's probably being kind to myself. I'm probably only understanding about a third of it, but I am trying to read Metahuman by Deepak Chopra. I love all of his stuff, and I know it's a great book, but it's not an easy read.
Well, I have to say, I think that particular book is, I'm in the camp of it being very hard. I must admit, I bought it.
Oh, right.
Read the first page, put it back down again. I'm going to come back to it once I've got my own degree in the specialist subject to be able to read it. So when you take all that knowledge, right, you've got all this knowledge that you've got from leadership. You're an avid reader of leadership. You follow some pretty incredible leaders as well. And actually, probably I should ask that question. When have you seen a leader that you've thought, that person is demonstrating my values and I wish I could do it in that way? So have you got any examples of leaders that are doing that you've seen?
Yes and no, I think, Mike. I'm always really wary of trying to replicate too closely other leaders, or sort of model, to use that phrase, other leaders' behaviours. I think if you go on, there are so many leadership courses. I've been on some myself that have done this. Actually, really early in my career, I even did run this exercise myself, where it's really common, like one of the second or third things on a leadership training program is you ask your group to think of some great leaders that spring to mind. And actually, certainly if you're doing this in the UK, all the sort of regular names come up, like Churchill, Sir Richard Branson, maybe Richard Reed from Innocent Smoothies. Actually, Hitler normally comes up, and then there's normally a debate. Was he a good or a bad leader? Potentially a good leader, but with some very dubious kind of morals and ambitions, etc., etc. But the danger for me is, and I think the weakness in that exercise is, that we're not any of those people. We might have some shared values with those people, but our values won't be exactly the same. All of those are sort of historical figures. So for most of us, we're leading in a different time. Society's different. The economy's different. We're probably leading in a different business. So me trying to copy and replicate what Sir Richard Branson or Winston Churchill did is actually having a pretty flawed strategy, which brings us full circle back to the values piece. Like, understand what you really value as a leader, what you stand for, and let that be the basis of your leadership and decision making. And then any books that you read, any leadership tools or frameworks that you discover, always be asking yourself, like, does this tool or model fit with the leader I want to be? Does it fit with my values? If it does, if the answer is yes, then great, go and use it. If the answer is absolutely not, no, then ditch it and find something else. Or if the answer is maybe, then what I encourage people who work with me is, like, if something I'm sharing doesn't quite work for you, then maintain the principle of it, but tweak it and adapt it so it works for you. Because actually, if you don't, straight away, all you're going to do is come across as sort of insincere, slightly incongruent to those that you lead. And they'll really quickly sense that sort of, I often talk about being a leader versus doing leadership. So if you're grabbing tools and models and replicating other leaders, that's what I class as doing leadership, whereas you need to find the stuff that's authentically, congruently you, and then you can be a leader. Because people can smell a mile off when you're doing leadership. They'll feel done to, and they'll feel a bit manipulated. And like, for people listening, like, they've probably experienced that. Like, I've experienced it. I wrote about it in Mission Leadership. Like, I've no doubt you've experienced someone, a colleague or a boss, doing that to you. Like, you can smell it like a rat.
Absolutely. It's it's been really fascinating because, as you just said, it all keeps coming back to values. When you're looking through your own career, what's driven you, what's made your easiest transitions between careers is going to somewhere that replicates your values.
Yeah.
And your values and helping others find what their values are is core to leadership and how you support organisations in how they lead their teams. Out of the values, though, are there any particular routines or ways of working that are particularly effective for you, which may or may not be useful for other people as well?
I've got loads, Mike. I'm those listeners who know me will know I'm probably a bit of a geek in this respect. I'm always trying like random new things that might give me a bit of an edge or make me more efficient or more productive. Some of the ones that have really endured is the planning system that I touched on earlier. The days when I start each day with that 10 to 15 minutes of planning in my journal are nearly always good days. The days when that slips are the days where sort of I find myself getting distracted, procrastinating a lot. The days when you go home and you think like, I'm not really sure like what I've done today doesn't feel really productive. So that's really, really strong. Exercise is really key to me. I have a phrase I use a lot. The times when I think I don't have time to exercise are the times when I really, really need to exercise. It helps me clear my head and focus. And then one other one that I'm playing around with at the minute is really trying to work in 45-minute blocks. I've got a little kitchen timer on my desk where I set it for 45 minutes. And when 45 minutes is up, I just make sure I get up, move around, get a drink. I might just blast out 20 press-ups in the office just to re-energize my body and change my physiology a bit, which seems to be working for me.
So I've got to ask about the 45 minutes. Why 45 minutes and why not an hour? Because let's face it, we often default in our Outlook or whatever diary system that we use. It's always half an hour or an hour. Let's face it.
Yeah, I'm really anti 1 hour, mainly because of that Outlook thing. I think in most businesses we just default to booking meetings that are an hour long because it's just easy, because that's almost how the Outlook calendar is laid out. So yeah, I can get on my soapbox about hour long meetings. The 45 minute thing, it's nothing that's uniquely mine. There's a whole load of research into concentration and learning, and it's different bits of research will tell you different amounts of time, but anywhere between 40 and 50 minutes, lots of the studies suggest, is potentially the optimum amount of time for concentration and focus. And beyond that, we start to get mentally fatigued. If anyone's ever looked at sort of Kanban principles, ways of working, they'll tell you to work in sort of 45 minute blocks and sprints. So that's where the 45 comes from.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Well, Ben, it's been an absolute pleasure to interview you for your own podcast. And I do hope that the listeners like this episode as a way to get a little bit more insight into you, your values and your leadership approach, as well as hopefully take some of the practical tips they've got from our discussion and maybe stuff that they can implement themselves. If anybody wants to get in touch with you and learn more about either the principles or get more of your reading list, how can they get in touch?
Probably best place is just go to the website. So www.ben-morton. If you stick /podcast on the end of that, you can sign up, and what I will send you straight away is I've been working with a fantastic sketch artist over in Italy. So for the first 5 episodes of the podcast, if people like them, I'll probably carry on doing them for every episode, but she's creating me they're absolutely stunning, a sort of visual summary of some of the key points from each episode. So for everyone who signs up via ben-morton.com/podcast. We'll email you those visual summaries straight out. Or just drop me an email, chat@ben-morton.com.
Great. You can also sign up to the newsletter. And this is, as a personal recommendation, this is a great form. Ben sends you out on a regular but not too frequent basis. Just some key reminders for those of us in leadership positions, just to prompt our thinking and remember that it's not just about the task, it is about the people and it's about the individuals. So, head over to ben-morton.com and please do sign up.
Cool. And thanks very much, Mike, for interviewing me for my podcast. Really, really appreciate your help.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
So there we have it, folks. Episode 1 of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it helped you get to know me a little better. And I hope it's given you a good flavour of what to expect in the next 12 episodes that we are going to be releasing for you over the next 3 weeks. Please do go and sign up for those visual summaries. They are absolutely beautiful. And two more things you could do if you've enjoyed it. Please spread the word and share the links via your social media channels. And do please head over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. Both of those things help us spread the word and enable us to keep bringing you more and more interviews with fantastic leaders. That's it for this episode. Why not go straight on and listen to episode number 2 and my interview with Phil Jones, who is the MD of Brother UK. Take care and lead on.
June, I believe it was, it extended from April. I've already pretty much tagged all the right files that I need for 2019 income tax, so I don't have to go back and take as long to find everything later on. So,
yeah, very cool.
Yeah, just some granular tactics mixed with some philosophies on working. Surrounding yourself with people that complement your skills or your lack thereof. And for me, it's verbally talking through things. Or try the song on repeat too. That's an interesting way to get a big volume of routine work done.
Amazing. We've just hit about 40 minutes, which is a real shame because I feel like we could carry on chatting for another hour. So I don't necessarily say this to every guest, but it'd be great maybe to get you back in the future for another chat on season 2 or 3 potentially. It's been absolutely fantastic chatting to you.
I would love to, Ben, and I really hope I provide some value. I get value of just reflecting and talking to you. And so I hope I've been of any service to you or any of the listeners. And the reason I'm honored to be asked is that for me, I think that's one of my life purposes, is just to be on my own journey. And then if there's anything I can share or glean and help others to get with what's important to them, I get such a big boost of energy just from that itself. So I'm totally interested in doing anything in the future. And I like the Q&A format too, because it kind of draws out stuff that you may not be currently thinking of. So I've had a big boost of energy myself. And so thank you for inviting me.
Amazing. You can definitely remove hope, because I can tell you it will definitely provide value to the listeners. It's definitely provided value to me. So thank you very much. Take care and enjoy the rest of your vacation.
Thanks, Ben. All the best to you and family, and hope to see you again soon when the traveling opens up again.
So there you have it, folks, my interview with Graham Brown from Lush Handmade Cosmetics. I think that episode was packed full of wisdom, as well as some really granular tactics that we could all take away and try using. If you found the episode helpful, then it would be amazing if you could share it via your social media. And please do also head over to iTunes and subscribe, as it enables us to keep growing the podcast and bringing you more and more interviews with senior leaders such as Graham. That's it for this episode, folks. I will see you all again soon, and lead on.